Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Kroger. Fresh for everyone.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Pretty interesting article up at CBSSports.com on the teams most impacted by missing spring practice for the upcoming 2020 season, and pretty high on that list is the Georgia Bulldogs. And I kind of want to address this for a moment, and I want to be careful not to make, I guess, too light of the fact that Georgia doesn't have its spring practice, but try to make the overall case that the absence of spring practice for Georgia may be, the impact of that may be a little different than we all think it is. Tom Fornelli's the writer here, CBSSports.com, and on his list of the top 20 teams impacted by having no spring practice, he's got Georgia at number 7. So pretty near the top for an issue at Georgia. And if you had to guess why Fornelli thinks that the Dogs could be, I don't want to say harmed, but maybe impacted is just a better word. If you want to make a guess as to why, you would probably do pretty well in arriving at his logic on this. He says, we all know what happened with LSU when it brought in Joe Brady to help revamp and modernize its offense. This is Tom Fornelli, CBSSports.com. Georgia's trying to do something similar this year by bringing in Todd Monken to introduce the forward pass. And that's a little bit of a snarky sentence for Fornelli, but we'll forgive him for that. He goes on to write, Monken's going to be doing so with a graduate transfer quarterback from Wake Forest and Jamie Newman. The hope is that by injecting some new life into one of the most talented rosters in the country, Georgia will be able to get over the hump and win a national championship. Well, it should be nice to have a spring practice to get the process started. Now, no one can deny that last sentence. Obviously, it's the absence of luxury of not having these spring practices to go through. But for Georgia and the other teams who are dealing with that, and there are SEC teams on this list higher than Georgia is, how big of a problem is it that there is no spring practice? I think to a degree it may be overstated, and I say that acknowledging that it's not a complete and total non-issue. It might just be not quite as significant as you think, or maybe said better, the more significant aspects of not having a spring practice may not quite be the ones that that Fornelli brings up here. First of all, on the quarterback in Newman, if you had to have a year in which you have no spring practice, to have a guy like Newman who is a graduate transfer, which shows a level of maturity, graduating from a school like Wake Forest, which shows a degree of intelligence, mature, smart, that's a pretty good skill set or profile to describe of a player who's forced to kind of be on his own right now and be intrinsically motivated to make sure he's as ready as possible when practice does eventually begin. Now, you say, well, it's not perfect that Newman's experience gained was not gained in a place like Georgia, nor against the rigors of SEC competition. That's probably true to a degree. However, Newman's probably something more close to a best case scenario, at least in comparison to, you know, maybe a guy like Miles Brennan at LSU that hasn't played at all, or a relatively unknown quarterback competition in Alabama between Jones, Mac Jones, and Bryce Young. There is a degree to which that you probably feel a little bit comfortable by the fact that Newman has gotten some experience and he's an older guy, even if that maturity and experience came at a place like Wake Forest. But beyond that, the Todd Monken part of this I find to be really, really fascinating because, and when Connor Riley is going to join us on today's show, here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger, when he comes up in a couple of minutes, I'm going to talk more to him about this. I think that Todd Monken is a really smart coach. The best I can tell, Monken's a sharp guy. And the way in which I hope he demonstrates his intelligence is by creating a Georgia offense that works with simplicity, especially for this year. And I think that simplicity is always a sign of intelligence. Simplicity, the ability to make things easy to understand, that's always, you know, a pretty impressive design feature no matter what you're talking about. The new iPhone, the way that Google works when it first came out, all of these things were sort of designed for, you know, not technologically savvy people such as myself to be able to use them. They were, for the most part, idiot-proof. And I think that Monken has got to demonstrate his intelligence by also somewhat designing the Georgia offense so that it can be worked, so that it can be understood, so that it can be implemented with maybe only a few weeks worth of practice to get ready for that. And I don't think that's too stiff of a challenge. I've said before over and over again that the real impact of not having a spring practice is not going to be the stuff that happens in between the players' ears, but it's going to be the stuff that's happening, you know, around their body. You know, how much bad food have they been ingesting? How much workout away from the watchful eye of an Instagram, you know, camera opportunity have they been going through? It's easy to photograph yourself in the grind, but what happens when the Instagram video, Instagram story's not playing? You know, what are you doing away from all of that? Are you staying as committed to all of this then? That's one of the things I think is going to greatly impact spring practice, more so than Munkin and Newman not having a chance to work with each other. And I can't fully tell you how Georgia players or how really any players will respond to the lack of accountability they have while they're away from the football program and only having limited contact through the magic of technology with some of their coaches. That's the thing that's more interesting to me. And by the way, if Kirby Smart was sitting here right now, in terms of what gives him some anxiety about not having spring practice, I'm also guessing that Munkin working with Newman might not be one of the things that he mentions most prominently. Let me give you an example of this. Let me go back to 2018 spring practice. Now, Smart, in this clip I'm about to play for you, is talking about that year's team getting ready for that upcoming season. However, there are a couple of things that you hear from Smart that I think could be true for virtually any spring practice, including the one that Georgia didn't get to have for this upcoming year. So let me go back in time to let you hear Kirby Smart. If he were sitting here right now telling us about the things that he wishes that he was able to accomplish during a spring practice, here are some of the things that I think he might say.
I think anytime you attack a spring, we're targeting special teams. We wanted to improve our special teams and not be complacent because we thought we were really good last year. So we developed some more receivers that could play on teams for us. The next thing, defense, we wanted to make more negative plays. We want to give more negative tackles for a loss. We put some things in that we worked on in the other practices, not today. And then offensively, we want to be more efficient with our RPOs. We want to have a little bit more package of some plays that we want to run that we didn't show today. So we feel like we accomplished that. Not necessarily today, but throughout spring, we were able to do that. The biggest thing that we need to do this spring is find out who we are and where our leaders. And I'm not sure we know exactly who those leaders are yet. We know who they're supposed to be, but are they willing to assume the role? Because it's going to be forced on them.
So really, I hear three words from Kirby Smart there that I think could be relevant for any discussion about any year's spring practice. And if Smart were to speak about what he's missing by not having that time to go with his team, I think that these three things would probably come up again here as well. The first one is Smart prominently mentioned special teams there. And the fact that Georgia plays so many different guys on so many different special teams units, not having a chance to find out about that during this particular time of the year, I think that probably is an inconvenience. And, you know, Smart wants to make impactful special teams plays. He wants to limit return yards. He wants to get his own return yards and certainly wants to block the occasional kick and, you know, things of that nature. You know, I think it takes good players to be able to go out there and do that. It takes a deep roster to fully fill out your special teams components. And by not learning more about that during spring practice, I'm sure he would say that, yeah, that is kind of missing in all of this. He also mentions the efficiency aspect of offense. And while I mentioned a moment ago that, hey, when it comes to the problems for Georgia not having spring practice, Munkin and Newman may not be as prominent on that list as you might think. There's no doubt that there is a certain loss of efficiency by not getting the timing down of what this new look offense is going to look like, no matter how new it is. There is a certain, I guess, sacrifice of efficiency knowing you're not getting a chance to go through these reps right now. I think that is manageable. I think it can be overcome, but indeed Smart would probably pay some credence to that, that there is a loss of efficiency, a lack of starting point for the summer practices when you don't get a chance to do some of this during the spring. He'd probably acknowledge that. But the bigger thing that you hear from him there, and that's something I don't think we can gloss over at all, is Smart says that spring practice is about determining your leaders. Who are your leaders supposed to be? Now, he says, I know who they're supposed to be, but who are they going to turn out to be? That spring practice is kind of a proving ground for that. And I guess it kind of brings to mind for me that that can still be true for this spring. It's just a very different kind of process for determining that, because the best leaders of all are the ones who can do what they're supposed to do when no one else is watching, or can reach out to a player the same way we've seen Nolan Smith do that on social media and guys like that, of challenging other players to make sure they're doing the best they possibly can. That's what real leadership's all about. And Smart has said a million times that when a message like that is delivered from player to player, it's a lot stronger than being delivered from coach to player. And so this spring can still be a proving ground for those leaders. It's just earned a different kind of way. But ultimately, for a team like Georgia that values leadership, it could end up being the best case of all, that you know, guys are forced to find a reservoir of maturity they otherwise would have never, you know, been able to know they had to bring about, and that they will work harder behind the scenes because they want to be ready to go when the season begins. And they will allow that insatiable hunger to enjoy a championship come to fuel them as they finally do get a chance to be back on the practice field coming up this summer. All of this is very much an unknown right now, but there's certainly an assumption that whatever the circumstances are thrown at them, Georgia will find a way to figure it out, find a way to handle it in some form or fashion. Either way, I just know this, and I know you agree with me. I cannot wait to see these guys back on the practice field again, back on the football field again soon. And whenever the world gets back to a healthier footing or whatever else, all of this can't get here soon enough for me. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented today by Kroger, and it's good to have you with us. And don't forget, we're still doing Dog Nation Daily on video every single morning at 10 a.m. It's not the regular show like we're doing here on podcast, but it is a chance for me to talk to you. So if you have time to do both, listen to the podcast, check us out on video. We're there for you on Facebook and YouTube right now. We'll look forward to being back again on Twitter very soon as well. But for now, the two platforms for the video are on Facebook and YouTube, and we'll look forward to catching up with you again on all those platforms. And by the way, after a hiatus yesterday, it's also nice to be back on the radio again today on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rev. We appreciate your patience on that, but it's great to be back on the radio again today on the Classic City. And of course, Kroger making it all possible. Don't forget, Kroger has altered its schedules right now for some of its stores to create special shopping hours for customers at risk of contracting the coronavirus. And that means stores in Georgia, Eastern Alabama, and South Carolina are going to block off an hour from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. That's Mondays through Thursdays for seniors over 60 and high-risk people as defined by the CDC. So extra hour of shopping for you Monday through Thursday at Kroger if you find yourself at a greater risk of the coronavirus. And that's a really, really generous thing for Kroger to be able to do. All right, a couple of minutes here before we bring on Connor Riley. I want to address a couple of hot topics that have been out there as of late. One of these, I guess, comes from Kirk Herbstreit from an ESPN radio interview last night. Weird that the only place I guess I've really seen any kind of significant reporting on this has been from TMZ. So this isn't a TMZ exclusive. It was TMZ hearing this on ESPN radio, but their attention to this has kind of, I guess, gotten the sports world talking here a little bit on Friday. This is what Herbstreit says about the upcoming football season. He says, I'm quoting this from TMZ, who got this from ESPN radio late on Thursday. He says, "I'll be shocked if we have NFL football this fall. If we have college football, I'll also be surprised if that happens." Herbstreit goes on to say, as quoted by TMZ via ESPN radio, that just because from what I understand, people that I listen to, you're 12, 18 months away from a vaccine. I don't know how you can let these guys go into a locker room and let stadiums be filled up and how you can play ball. I just don't know how you can do that with the optics of it. So listen, I can't say this enough. Herbstreit's words right here are totally unhelpful, completely, completely misguided. And frankly, it comes off as a degree of arrogance. You know, Herbstreit's no doctor. He's no, is it, was it epidemiologist or whatever? He can't even say the word. He's not one of those guys. I don't care what his opinion is on something like this. You know, words like this, all they do is go to kind of, you know, create a greater level of fear and anxiety in our community. And when a guy like Herbstreit says this, you know, I don't think he realizes the ramifications this has on the community of not just football, but college athletics. If the season were to get canceled, and I've said before that I don't believe that it will, if it were to get canceled, there are coaches that will lose their jobs. And there are scholarship athletes, not just in football, but other sports, that will have to find something else to do because the school that they're at may very well not be able to afford that sport anymore if they don't have football to fit the bill for all of this. So Herbstreit kind of casually saying, yeah, I think the season's going to get canceled. That's easy for someone like that to say because he makes millions of dollars. And I'm sure that he feels like that his job will still be there a year from now, even if there is no football. But most of the people, or I should say a lot of the people who live in the football world don't have that same luxury that Kirk Herbstreit does. So Herbstreit, since he doesn't know the science of all of this, since he doesn't know, you know, the real-life implications of all of this, he should not say what he said last night. And for the people at ESPN and ABC who are forced to sell advertising for the products that have enriched him so much, the process of selling that advertising is now made more difficult by a guy like Herbstreit going out there and saying the product that you're buying into, he doesn't think it's going to exist this fall. I don't think Herbstreit was thinking about what he said. And I think this is an example of what I've always thought was a weird dichotomy with Herbstreit. He is great on television. I think he's super entertaining on ESPN's College Game Day. And I think he does a good job of, you know, broadcasting the games on ABC on Saturday night. But you get him away from that ESPN camera. You get him away from that ABC camera, and suddenly Herbstreit just kind of turns into a weird guy. He's awful on Twitter. He's always getting in needless, meaningless fights with random people. And, you know, in this case right here, he's sort of speaking off the cuff in an uneducated way. Obviously, if people aren't healthy come late summer and fall when football is beginning, there will be no football. But the time to decide that will be then. The SEC canceled the SEC basketball tournament like 2 hours before the game was supposed to be played. The NBA decided to pull guys off the court during a game. There's no need months in advance to make a decision about what's going to happen this fall. Deep down, I hope that Herbstreit's smart enough to know that, and I hope he's humble enough to know that we don't care about his opinion about science right now. Just let the smart people handle that, and you sit around and wait to come do a broadcast when it's time to do so. I think Herbstreit was wrong to speak out on this. And frankly, I hope he's you know, justifiably criticized for it. But nonetheless, we'll turn our attention to something else. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, on the subject of happier times and more interesting stuff, including the future of Todd Gurley playing professional football here in Atlanta. Let's talk to our buddy Connor Riley. It's Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger, and it's good to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And you're on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Good chance for us to talk to Connor Riley, who has a really interesting piece up at DogNation.com right now. Fun video looking at the acquisition of Todd Gurley by the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, Connor, for me, during this time, we haven't had a ton of sports going on. The fact that the Falcons have kind of leaned into the marketing on Gurley, and not just him, really, but even, you know, Dante Fowler, the former Gator, Laquon Treadwell, the former Ole Miss guy, Hayden Hurst, former South Carolina Gamecock, seemingly having some fun being here in the heart of SEC country. I like the way the team is kind of doing this right now, and in particular, Gurley, who remains to be seen how much he still has left in his career, but this is one of the really dazzling athletes to have come through Georgia in quite some time, and he's a highlight reel waiting to happen. So from that standpoint, I'm eager to see him in a Falcons uniform in the town where I live, and I sort of get the impression you feel the same way.
Yeah, I'm not a Falcons fan by any stretch of the means. I actually think this is a pretty small decision by them to bring them in, both from a business standpoint in terms of, you know, the off-field value and interest he generates from local Georgia and Atlanta sports fans. And on the field, you know, if it doesn't work out, he's only here for 1 year. It's not a big financial commitment. And if it does work out, it really helps out the Atlanta offense. They said in the piece, I think Matt Ryan's the best quarterback he's ever played with. I think Julio Jones is the best player, period, offensive player, period, he's ever played with. So you factor that in. Things should be a little bit easier for him this year. And if his health and his knee checks out okay, I think he could be a real asset to the Falcons this year.
The other part of this is, not to get too deep in the weeds on this, this may only be fascinating to me, but, you know, I'm a Braves fan, and the Braves have kind of always been the South's team. We kind of call it Braves country. The Braves call it Braves country. You know, Alabama, the Carolinas, places like that are just, you know, a hotbed for Braves fans. And obviously, it's a little different in pro football because there are more Southern NFL teams. But given the fact that the Saints may be at the tail end of the Drew Brees era, and the Alabama NFL fans who may have leaned in the direction of the Saints in the past, maybe that's a fan base that's up for grabs now. And you've got Jacksonville down south of Atlanta who's going to play a second game in London this year. Maybe some of those South Georgia, North Florida fans are also up for grabs if the connection that the Jaguars have to their hometown is waning in the way that it kind of feels like it might be. But there really is a chance, I think, for Atlanta, whether it be ingratiating itself to UGA fans or furthering its connection as kind of the capital city of SEC country. I think there's actually a marketing play here to, not to say that you only sign and draft SEC team players, but when you do, make a big deal about it. I think there's a way to kind of capture a segment of passive NFL fans who may be up for grabs here. So from that standpoint, I think this is also kind of, I guess, at least fun to watch from a marketing perspective.
I don't know if I totally agree with that. I think the big reason the Braves are as popular as they were was because they were just on, I believe, TBS, the superstation back in the day. So everyone had a better chance of seeing them. Whereas, you know, if you're in South Carolina, you're probably watching the Carolina Panthers. And if you're in, you know, if you're in Orlando, you're probably watching, unfortunately, the Jacksonville Jaguars or the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So from that standpoint, I don't know about the South, the Atlanta Falcons becoming the new team of the South, but I do also think there are a lot of SEC transplants in the city of Atlanta, and you know, they like seeing Alabama fan, you like seeing Calvin Ridley play for them. If you are, like you said, a South Carolina fan, you probably have to be pretty excited about Hayden Hurst coming here, even though he was a third-string tight end of Baltimore. So I do certainly see your point, and I do think, you know, you see this especially with the Gurley angle of you draft these star players from these SEC colleges. There's probably going to be a little bit more interest in a city like Atlanta, which is more of a melting pot than some of the other ones around the South.
One of the things we talked about before you joined us here today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger is how much George may be missing out by not having spring practice. One of the writers from CBS ranks Georgia fairly near the top of teams not, you know, getting a chance to go through spring practice. And it's worth pointing out that Georgia, unlike some teams, had zero spring practices, where a handful of teams had some before the coronavirus shutdown took place. Connor, how much do you think, just given the complexion of the Georgia roster right now and the new coaching staff in some cases in place, how much do you think Georgia misses out by not having spring practice?
I think on the offensive side of the ball, I would say a significant loss, just because you had Jamie Newman in place. A reason for bringing him in when you brought him in was because he would be able to go through spring practice, get more acclimated, and get ready for the season. And now, unfortunately, that has essentially been wiped away, and you have less time to prepare and install and sort of get familiarity and work out what does and what doesn't work with a new quarterback and a whole new offense. Now, I would also say that another big loser in this, I didn't read the CBS piece, but I think Alabama comes away as a loser in this as well, given that they figure to have a quarterback battle between Mac Jones and incoming freshman Bryce Young, and they didn't get a chance to look at how those guys looked either, because they had zero spring practices. So the team that's really Georgia's biggest competition, and I believe Florida didn't get any practices in as well. So those teams, the teams that I think Georgia competes with or is competing with the most this year for what they want to do, were also similarly impacted by this. So I do think that from a wider team standpoint, mitigates some of that. And the Georgia defense is going to be just fine. I think it has a chance to be the best in the country this year. But I think from an offensive standpoint, this is fairly significant.
Yeah, I think that's probably certainly an understandable, you know, argument to make. I guess it also touches on for me what is kind of one of the, I guess, pet peeves when it comes to college football. I'm a big believer that brilliance is indicated by simplicity. You know, look at, you know, major technological innovations. One of the things that made them great was the fact they were easy for the average person to use. And I think in coaching, it's got to be the same way. You know, I think of Todd Monken as certainly a pretty sharp guy. I was really excited when Georgia hired him. And I think a good coach, a smart, offensive-minded coach, pays off in kind of a truncated schedule in that show me how smart you are by making something really simple and easy for a guy like Jamie Newman to adapt to quickly, understand efficiently, and get on to the business of playing football. You know, I don't need you to make it more complicated right now. I need you to make it a little easier to understand. And to have a coach that can express his brilliance through simplicity of what he's asking the other players to make sense of in a short period of time, I think that may be one of the things that determines who truly succeeds this upcoming season and who doesn't.
Yeah, and I think this is the real loss here is, you know, we don't know how Monken and Smart are going to interact and sort of put together this offense, because I can think back in Ed Orgeron's early time at LSU, there was a lot of hype around, you know, him bringing in Matt Canada. Matt Canada was a very well thought of guy, a guy who, you know, a lot of people thought was going to fix the offense, and that marriage did not work at all early on, and it was clear that things were just not going to work out the way that it did. And so when it comes to sort of situations like that, again, just not having the data points, not being able to see how to sort of these things work out, and just getting on the coaching, getting on the practice field and just working some of these kinks out and seeing, okay, this is how he likes to operate a practice, this is how I need to go about doing my business. I think losing that, long-term, it's still that losing this won't determine the ultimate success or failure of the season. But given Georgia's tough start to the 2020 season with games against Virginia and Alabama in a 12-day span, I do think that this could be a little bit of a tricky situation for them.
So are you in line with something that I've been saying, which is that the physical condition of the players is going to be a lot more important than the game planning, and the overall condition that players show up to campus in is not going to be program compared to program. It's going to be player compared to player within those programs, because I don't care how organized your institution is, and Georgia's as organized and kind of, you know, aggressive in terms of its management of players any program could be. Fact of the matter is, you're just not able to oversee them like you're used to being able to do, and you don't have all that much control over them. So ultimately, I think that's going to be the thing that we all kind of tune in for at the beginning of September when these games begin, of who took care of their bodies when they were off by themselves for such a long period of time. And that's just not as easy to do as it sounds like it is. And so I think ultimately that's going to be the most important story of what brand of football do we see, not just from Georgia, but all teams across the country this year, of how well did players take care of themselves when they only had themselves to answer to for what they were putting into their bodies.
Right. And to that point, I think Georgia could be well set up in that aspect, just given you think of depth, of having guys, of just having, you know, capable bodies. While maybe not all of them might be, you know, as finely tuned as they need to be, you probably feel more confident about those guys being physically prepared, or at least physically able to handle the rigors of the game, than a lot of other programs. So, you know, unfortunately this year, Alabama is also one of those similar teams that has that depth that Georgia, that can really match up with Georgia. Whereas if they were playing, you know, a Tennessee early on, or, you know, a team that was a rung below what Alabama is, I think that would really set up Georgia well early on in its schedule. But having Alabama in that week three game, I do think that sort of mitigates the sort of how prepared can you be. And I do find it interesting that, you know, the whole timing of the Scott Cochran hire, the turnover in the Alabama strengths program.
Yeah.
They have a new guy directing that, and I do wonder what sort of effect that has on the players. Those guys are probably taking new marching orders. How are they reacting to it? How receptive are they to it? Given that the guy that was there before had been there for over a decade and was sort of leading them in that aspect.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really fair question to ask for sure. You know, I said this in the video yesterday, when it comes to the physical condition of players, we are in a situation right now where you can almost stand the reason that a few of the guys that show up for every team may not be in the typical game shape they would be in a normal year with a normal off season. And so from that standpoint, it's going to benefit to have just a greater number of capable bodies, because if there's a certain level of attrition because of kind of what goes down, then having more capable players is going to matter. That's true for Georgia. It's probably also true for Alabama, to a degree LSU in the SEC, and then think about the Ohio States, the Clemsons beyond that. But it's just another example of the overall aggregate level of talent you have on your roster is what's going to be really important here, because if you have to subtract a couple of those names because they're just not in shape at the beginning of the season, all the more important to have a roster full of guys you can turn to.
Exactly. And Georgia, you know, the reason we harp on recruiting as much as it is and signing the best 25 player classes that you can every cycle is to have, you know, you understand that attrition and injuries are going to happen over the course of years, and being ready and prepared to have someone step in for that. I think Georgia has not that they were ever planning for a scenario like this, but they are pretty well set up. You think at the outside linebacker position, yes, they have Azeez Ojulari, who was the team's leading pass rusher last year, but then they can roll off guys like Nolan Smith, Jermaine Johnson, Adam Anderson, even guys like Robert Beer and Walter Grant have played significant football for them. So they're not necessarily, you know, counting on any one guy. And if, God forbid, one of them isn't exactly in the tip-top shape, they have a number of guys who can turn to, and the likelihood that all those guys are out of shape is pretty slim.
Let me finish up on this topic. There's something that Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly said last time at SportsCenter that's kind of gotten some attention of. He really felt like July 1st was a time in which programs need to be back doing what he would call physical conditioning for a few weeks and then heading towards the summer practice to be ready to begin the season on time. Connor, this is exactly the kind of attitude right now that I want to push back against. Obviously, I understand why that would make things better than an alternative where you're trying to get things ready on a shorter time frame. But it's fair to point out, in Kelly's case here, he's not speaking about this, at least the best that I can tell from understanding the context. He's not speaking about this because he's concerned that the coronavirus may be still lingering at that time. It sounds like Kelly's not sure about that one way or another. He's speaking about this more from the convenience of what would we need to do to have football that looks like what we're used to seeing in September. And I understand, you know, how frustrating it's going to be for coaches if it's a little bit of a sloppy brand of the sport in September, But I'm not pushing this season back by a couple of weeks just so the coaches like Brian Kelly can have a higher level of comfort with the summer practice they're able to have. I'm just not doing that. This may be one of those years where all of us, including someone like me who really wants to see Georgia, you know, win a championship, we may all have to sort of suck it up and deal with a brand of football in September that's a little bit ugly, but some ugly football in September and 12 regular season games being played, assuming that the virus moves its way out and we all feel, you know, good about the health situation again. I'll take 12 ugly regular season games as opposed to a more buttoned up version of the sport that doesn't start until October or something along those lines.
Yeah, and as an NFL fan, as someone who prefers NFL football to college football, if you're worried about how college football is going to look in the slapping and how, you know, clear and cut and everything is, you know, I don't know what really to tell you. I think the larger point you make there about the importance of having 12 games, I think the importance of trying to get things back as close to normal as we can, just given the great unbalance and upset of everything the way things are right now, I think that's a little bit more important than, oh, this game's not going to look as crisp as it is against New Mexico State in week one or week two of the college football season. Obviously, there are some teams that have big games to open the year, but for a large majority of these teams, conference play usually doesn't begin right away, or it is just one game, and the real meat of your schedule isn't until October and November anyway. So the whole, I'm worried about how we're going to look to start the season, that's every college football coach ever. You could tell them that they could start training, doing unlimited training on January 2nd, and they would still be coaches. Oh, I don't know how we're going to look to start the season. So part of that is probably just some generic coach worry, coach speak out there anyway.
But did I, you do, I, go ahead. No, you go ahead.
I mean, I get where Kelly is somewhat coming from, but the larger point you make there is the one that I agree with, that, you know, we can't be talking about reducing games. I believe I saw Kirk Herbstreit say he would go ahead and cancel the season. If that happens, that's just really disastrous for a lot of people and a lot of parties involved for a variety of reasons. So to your larger point, I would take 12 bad games over 8 okay games.
This is a loaded question. I'm not even quite sure what you'll use to answer it, but we'll finish with this. Can you foresee anyone arguing against making the summer training schedule longer? I guess if some schools, maybe certain states, aren't allowing their students back, maybe they argue against that. But if we said, okay, typically practice starts at the end of July, we're going to have it start at the beginning of July to, you know, kind of accommodate what Kelly said he felt like they needed, assuming Major League Baseball is playing games again, assuming the NBA is back dribbling basketballs again, you know, assuming you've got, you know, return to normalcy for golf and some of these other summer sports, is there any significant pocket of programs, conferences that would argue against just making a one-time provision to start all this earlier?
No, I don't think so. And I'd actually be interested to see, you know, sort of how it goes. And if coaches like, you know, getting, you know, as opposed to getting 15 practices in the spring, if you get 7 or 8 in July, but you get your full team there, because if that, you know, if Georgia's able to get their summer enrollees there and enrolled in doing those practices, those 8 practices, as opposed to just the 6 early enrollees that came through in the spring, I wonder if that might eventually, you know, like they're talking about with the NBA moving this sort of schedule, I wonder if that becomes the new normal and, you know, you sort of treat July 1st as the start of college football practices and just given, you know, you do learn more. I think you would learn more about what you have in that freshman class, getting in the mall, getting in there for 8 practices in July instead of just the traditional way things used to be done. As far as the argument of for or against it, those extra practices, I find that really hard to believe just given so many teams saw their spring practices washed away. You know, if this thing were to start and the shutdowns and whatnot started April 1st and more teams had gotten through portions of spring practice and in some cases even finished spring practice, I do think maybe you see some teams pulling back a little bit, but just given just about everybody has practices to make up, I think they'd be in favor for it.
All right, Connor, good stuff. I look forward to reading some things from you this weekend here at DogNation.com, including an update on the top bracket moments of the Kirby Smart era, and then we'll chat with you here on our program again next week as well.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, BA.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Always fun to have Connor Riley here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Also always fun to look at what's happening on the SEC. We'll do that coming up here in a moment as a part of our SEC Through. And as we do that, I want to remind you of a very generous act on the part of our friends at the AJC. You know, if you go to DogNation.com right now, go to the very top of the page, right there at the banner, you'll see a link for the Daily AJC e-paper. Right now, while our world is dealing with so much uncertainty and confusion and, frankly, in some cases, fear and anxiety associated with the coronavirus, there's really no better way to stay up to date on what's really happening in the world, understanding the facts. The way they're presented by the AJC, the Daily E-Paper right now made free for you, absolutely free to read. The best way, I think, for you to get there is to go to the link at the top of DogNation.com. Click inside that link, read the Daily AJC E-Paper. You can find out how this is impacting the city of Atlanta, the state of Georgia, and really throughout the rest of the world there as well. No more important time than now to be up to date on the facts and the true news that's out there, and the AJC is providing unparalleled coverage of that here in our state. So check out the AJC e-paper, available for now for free. Find the link to that up at the top of the page at DogNation.com. With that said, let's roll on here and do our SEC throw-in. I started the program by talking about the article at CBSSports.com looking at the teams most impacted by the absence of spring practice, and Georgia was number 7 on that list. As I told you at the time, Georgia actually not the highest rated SEC teams, at least in the opinion of Tom Fornelli from CBS Sports, in terms of not having a spring practice to go through. His number 1 and number 2 teams hurt by not having a spring practice are both SEC teams. He mentions LSU here. Let me read a little bit of what Fornelli says about LSU not having spring practice. He says it was the most obvious choice to be the top of the list because they're coming off a great season, one of the greatest in college football history, and he goes on to say that with, you know, everything that you have to replace, basically getting rid of a Joe Burrow, getting rid of a Joe Brady, and all kinds of stuff. He says, according to Bill Conley's returning production numbers, that the Tigers rank 127th nationally in returning production. So in addition to losing high-profile names like Joe Burrow, Joe Brady, statistically speaking, LSU loses a lot off of last year's team. Are they going to be able to recuperate without having a spring practice? I mean, ultimately, my prediction on LSU has kind of always been for the upcoming season that I see this being an LSU team that returns to looking a lot like LSU did pre-2019. And that's obviously not a bad version of college football. Burrow and Ed Orgeron were winning plenty of games in 2018, and this has been a very stout defense, a very athletic team for a number of years. I think the one thing that's going to resemble a little less than 2019 here in 2020 is going to be that high-powered offense. And that's not to say that I don't think Scott Linehan was a pretty good hire as a passing game coordinator, as a replacement for Joe Brady, who's now the offensive coordinator with the Carolina Panthers. I think that Linehan was a pretty competent hire. I just think that Brady really caught lightning in a bottle last year, and I think replicating that's going to be very difficult. So ultimately, if you got used to an LSU team that ran the football, that played defense, that had a whole bunch of NFL athletes, but maybe coming up just short in the college at the quarterback position, and maybe coming up just short in the biggest games that matter, like, say, Alabama, this year's version of LSU, I think, is going to look a lot like that. Speaking of Alabama, Fornelli mentions the Crimson Tide as his number 2 team in the country most impacted by not having a spring practice. What Fornelli says about the Crimson Tide is that they're in a bit of a rut right now, or at least what qualifies as a rut during the Nick Saban tenure. Didn't make the college football playoff for the first time in history, now gone 2 seasons without winning a national championship. He says that's the longest stretch the Crimson Tide's gone without a title under Nick Saban. So he goes on to say Saban and company must find a replacement for Tua Tagovailoa. They're going to have a significant quarterback battle going on. And he also says they lost a few by losing a few weeks of practice to settle it. That makes things more difficult. He says Alabama's not at LSU's level, but they've got a lot of other production to replace as well, and that's something that Alabama's going to have to deal with. So I think ultimately, if you're a Crimson Tide fan, yes, the quarterback competition that would go on between, you know, Bryce Young and Mac Jones made more difficult by not having a spring practice. I think what Tide fans are hopeful they're able to do is lean on the two big returners, Najee Harris coming back to the running back position, Dylan Moses coming back on defense, and hoping that both those guys can help reestablish some of the identity that Alabama used to have. You know, I think that the loss of Tua Tagovailoa is obviously huge, but I don't think you should understate what the loss of Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs are going to be off that wide receiving core. Devontae Smith remains, and Jaylen Waddle remains, and Waddle's a big-time player. But not being as deep as they've been at receiver before is going to be a tough thing to deal with. And I don't think you can gloss it over when it comes to Alabama. Other SEC teams that show up on Fornelli's list, Mississippi State, obviously breaking in the new coaching staff with Mike Leach. That's a part of that. Missouri as well, breaking in a new coaching staff with Eli Drinkwitz. They come in 12th and 13th on this list. Other SEC teams that make the list in the top 20, that's it in terms of teams that make the top 20 of Tom Fornelli's list at CBSSports.com of teams most impacted by not having a spring practice. Georgia's right there in the middle of all that. They are 7th, according to Fornelli, the CBS writer, ahead of Mississippi State and Missouri and just behind LSU and Alabama. And, you know, I said this off the top of the program, and I guess I'll quickly reset the opinion here for a moment, is that it's an inconvenience for everyone, but it's something that everybody's also having to deal with. And one way or another, just sort of finding a way to suck it up and make the most of the situation, that's going to be the job for college football coaches this year. These guys are notorious control freaks, but obviously we're all dealing with a situation right now that's completely out of our control. And frankly, when you think about how coronavirus has impacted the world beyond just the people who are getting sick, that's like the weirdest part of all of this, right? The fact that we're all having to just sort of settle in and get used to something that we can't control an outcome for. We can't necessarily predict the outcome. We can't control the outcome, and we're all having to get used to that. Maybe the big-time college football coaches are more than others because they are typically the ones maybe used to having control of every situation, but not in this particular situation. We'll make that your SEC through. And I want to do a little bit more on this topic in a moment, including what one big-time coach has said about this. But as I do, I'll remind you, as I said before, we're live on video every single day at 10 a.m., just like always. And it's a little bit different version of the show. We can't do the regular edition of Dog Nation Daily presented by Kroger the way that we always do. But we're taking comments. We're talking Georgia football. We're doing all that kind of stuff. And so if you have time to be a part of both products, thanks for listening to the podcast here right now or listening to us on the radio on 960 The Ref, but also join me on at 10 a.m. on the Dog Nation Facebook page or the Dog Nation YouTube page. I'd love to talk to you on the video version of that program. We'll do our R.S. Andrews cooldown. You know, R.S. Andrews is famous for taking care of your air conditioning, heating, plumbing, and electric problems. Story after story, they've been delivering smiles. It's going to be really hot this weekend. You may be thinking about it's time to get an R.S. Andrews $99 smiley tune-up to make sure your system is running at factory fresh specs. Well, if that's the case for you, then check them out online at rsandrews.com and tell them BA sent you over there that you heard about them right here on Dog Nation Daily. And, of course, we'll see you on Monday at 10 a.m. for a version of our R.S. Andrews cooldown live on video on both Facebook and YouTube. Let me mention Brian Kelly here. Kelly goes on SportsCenter last night. I talked to Connor Ollie about this a moment ago. You may have heard that. But he goes on SportsCenter last night. Let me give you the quote here in terms of what he kind of views as the moment in which college football needs to have a reckoning about if it's ready to begin a season on time or not. The quote from Kelly says, "There's going to be a day where we all as college football administrators and coaches come up with a date from a player safety standpoint. We have to say this is the date that we can live with to get these young men physically conditioned and ready to go into camp." This was on SportsCenter, of course, with Scott Van Pelt yesterday. He says, "The realistic goal here is probably a minimum of 4 weeks of conditioning before you put them in camp. College football is going to be affected if we're not playing in 90 days in terms of conditioning element and getting these young men ready." So I'm always a little bit skeptical anytime I hear the word player safety being thrown around as a reason to do something or not to do something. And that's not to say that I don't take player safety as important. I just don't always take it at face value when a coach starts citing player safety for a reason to do something or not to do something. And this is the case here as well. I think coaches are afraid of looking dumb right now. I think coaches are afraid of looking ill-prepared. As I said a moment ago, I think that there is a real fear for these control-freak coaches of having to deal with a scenario in which they don't have total control of a situation anymore. It's understandable. We're all dealing with that to a degree. But here's what I would say to Brian Kelly, and I'd say this to Kirby Smart, too, if you happen to be listening right now, that you may have to get used to a season this year that doesn't look like the seasons that you've enjoyed in the past. You may have to get used to a little bit of an ugly brand of football. There may be some out-of-shape players. There may be some poorly prepared teams. But assuming that the world is healthy and assuming that the powers that be on all of this have kind of given us a little bit of an all clear, ugly football being played is better than perfect football not being played. I'm not waiting for Brian Kelly to get his team together to start the season. I'm just not. I'm going to tell Brian Kelly the same thing I'd tell Kirby Smart or anybody else. Suck it up, go through practices, and get your team on the field. Because if we are healthy come late summer, if we are healthy heading towards fall, then football is going to provide a valuable service to our country. It's going to return us to a sense of normalcy, and it's going to reestablish a sense of stability for our country. economy. We always know inherently the importance that football has in terms of holding the fabric of our society together. And I think this particular year, I think it's never been more important than it is right now. I understand Kelly's anxiety about all of this, and I understand a lot of coaches probably feel the same way that he does of, well, if we can't get out there by the beginning of July, we can't start the season in September because it takes too long to get ready. I realize that's the way you'd want things to be in a perfect world, but look around. It's not a perfect world right now. We're all adapting and making the best of the situation, and that includes maybe starting a season with less preparation than the average coach is used to. But that's just the way it's going to have to be this year, because if we are healthy, we need teams on the field and playing games. And thank you so much for being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger. Hope you're getting ready for a great weekend. And by the way, let me also mention one more thing about our friends at Kroger. If you have found that your work situation has kind of been altered, if you've had work taken away from you because of what's been going on here with our world the last couple of weeks, well, Kroger is stepping up the plate here. They're actually hiring right now. So check out this website, jobs.kroger.com. Jobs.kroger.com. That'll get you in touch with them. Gator Hater Updater time, 1,245 days. That's how long it's been since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. We'll see you back here on Monday, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Kroger.